All right, good afternoon. This is Richard Hsu, host of Hsu Untied, where I interview lawyers with interesting side hobbies and occasionally former lawyers who've gone on to do very interesting things. And today I'm very pleased and honored to have as my guest Brad Meltzer, who's a novelist, a screenwriter, TV show host. Brad, welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
So, Brad, let's see, you obviously also a fellow Columbia Law School alum. Tell me a little bit about how you even went to law school to begin with.
I went to law school, truthfully, out of fear. Really, is the only way to describe it. My father was someone who just had money problems. We had money issues our whole life. When I was younger, I should say. And what happened was, my dad was one of those guys who just wasn't good with it. When he was 39 years old, he lost his job and decided to start his life over from scratch. And he basically said, we're going to move from Brooklyn, New York to Miami, Florida. He had no job, no place to live, nothing. I remember coming home from school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and my dad was there, and when that happens, it's bad news. And he was like, we're leaving. And I lost everything in one day, my whole life, my social life, my friends, our family that was there, they were all gone in one day. And my dad had $1,200 saved and started over. And thank God everything went well for him. When we moved, but I will say it was terrifying, and I didn't want that life. So I, at that point, came out of college, had some debt to pay off, and I was going to go to law school. I wanted to go to law school, and an entrepreneur named Eli Siegel in Boston said to me, you know what, before you go to law school, why don't you come work for me? I'll be your mentor. I'll take you under my wing. And if you like it, you stay. And if you hate it, you leave us some money in your pocket. So I moved my stuff to Boston. I moved everything to Boston. And the week I got to Boston, my mentor left the job. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've wrecked my life. I thought, I've wrecked my life, and this is it, and it's terrible. And it's important to me that, I do something good with it. So I did what everyone would do in that situation. I said, I'm going to write a novel. And I started writing novels. The novel never got published, and then I the following year went to law school. But that was what took me to law school, is that idea that I knew I wanted to write novels, but I didn't want to live the life my dad had. So I went to law school out of fear of having that. I needed something to fall back on.
So did you ever practice law? Did you ever work as a lawyer? I mean, you graduated from
law school. Define practice, right? no, the honest answer is I didn't. I was a summer associate one summer, and then I was lucky. When I started writing my first book, as I said, it never got published. I got 24 rejection letters, and in fact, I got my 24 rejection letters by the end of my first year of law school. But I was lucky enough that right after that happened, and there were only 20 publishers, I got 24 rejection letters, which means, some people are writing you twice to make sure you get the point. But I loved the process of writing. I wanted to continue doing it. And it was the end of my first year in law school, and I said, if they don't like that book, I'm going to write another. And if they don't like that, I'm going to write another. And then the week after I started, I got my 23rd and 24th rejection letter, I started what became the 10th Justice, which was my first published work.
And when did that book actually get? Did you get that?
That wound up selling while I was a second year law student.
Wow!
And so because I was a second year law student, the book sold. I at that point by the next summer, I knew that I'd taken a summer associate job, but I knew at that point I at least had 1 year to try and be a writer, and then I'd know how the book did or not. And so by the time the third year was over. Right after that, the book came out, and then I really got to see whether I could continue being a lawyer or whether I was going to continue being a writer.
Yeah, I see. So what was your first novel about? Was it a legal novel or was something else?
No, like all writers, we write what we know, and I had just gotten out of college, so I didn't know anything but being in college. So it really was it was a friendship story in college. When I came out of college and I started law school, now I had a brand new universe to write about. I had the law. And I never went to law school to get plot ideas for my novel, but I remember sitting in the back of a law school classroom and just daydreaming it and writing in the back of one of those. Remember when you go to law school, they give you the free notebooks to kind of take notes in, a little calendar before there were phones. And I remember writing in the back of it, Supreme Court and clerk, and I circled it, and on the top I wrote book idea. And I just kept that with me, and I just was just obsessed with that world of clerks, that you have these 27-year-old kids who are, you know, look at the Supreme Court decision as we're talking came down, and it's just, you know, yes, of course, decided by the justices, but, you know, often written by these clerks who are 27-year-olds. And I just was obsessed with that, that you can have all that power in the hands of just, you know, some young kid.
I mean, it's interesting because you said you always wanted to be a writer. When did you figure out – how old were you figure out that you were actually any good at it?
You know, when I was in ninth grade, I had a teacher named Sheila Spicer who said to me that I could write. And she said, you can write. And I was like, everyone can write. She said, no, you know what you're doing. And she tried to put me in the honors class, and I had some sort of conflict. So she said, here's what I'm going to do. She said, sit in the corner for the entire year. Ignore everything I do at the blackboard. Ignore every homework assignment I give. And what she was really saying was, you're going to do the honors work, and you're going to thank me later. And sure enough, a decade later, I went back to her classroom. I knocked on the door. My first novel was published, and I said, my name is Brad Meltzer, and I wrote this book, and it's for you. And she starts crying. I'm like, why are you crying? She said, you know, I didn't think I was having an impact anymore.
That's funny.
Because I was going to retire this year because I didn't think I was having an impact. And I said, you have 30 students. We have one teacher. And obviously that hit me pretty hard. And I'm thrilled that she obviously stayed longer after that. But it really was that teacher that was the first person that said, you can do this.
What is it about writing that you really like or that you're really good at? I mean, what is it, the characters? Is it the dialogue? I mean, what aspect of fiction writing does, you know, really, you know, is most interesting to you?
Interesting is a different word than what, you know, what things come harder, things come, you know, harder than others. But to me, it's always about dialogue. When I was there, all I knew, I never knew I wanted, even with what she told me in ninth grade, I never knew I wanted to be a writer. Because I grew up, that wasn't a real job. I didn't know any writers. That's not real. It doesn't put dirt on your fingernails. It doesn't put calluses on your hands.
Right.
And so what happened for me was when I would go into, even when I was in college, I would go to the professor in my psychology class, and they would have to compare Freud and Erickson and write an expository essay. I would wind up going after class and go to the professor and say, listen, instead of writing an expository essay like the other 100 kids in this class, can I write a story where Freud and Erickson go on a picnic and get in a fist fight? And as they're fighting, they're going to be talking about what their philosophies are. And the professor would inevitably always say yes, because they were just like, I'm going to read 199 of the same paper. I might as well get a different one. It wasn't me trying to kind of outthink anyone or outwit or outlast. You know, it wasn't like Survivor here. It was just how I knew how to communicate, was through dialogue and character. I can't explain why. It's just how I knew how to do it. And it wasn't until I went to that job that didn't work out that I finally realized, oh, I can use that and try and tell a real story.
And how do you get your ideas for your books now? I mean, obviously you've written a lot of successful books. I mean, do these ideas come to you or do you research? I mean, how do the ideas come to you now?
You know, I think there are just – I think ideas are everywhere and you have to hunt and kill them. You know, you have to track them down. So sometimes it's, you know, I'll be in the – I was in the National Archives, and they took me into one of these rooms where you can only reclassify documents. You know, you don't reclassify documents in Washington, D.C. at your desk. Someone over your shoulder can look at it. So they have what they call SCIFs, these secret compartmentalized, you know, little lead-lined rooms, truly, that are, you know, by the Department of Defense, have certain regulations so that documents can be read in there. And it's like walking into a human-sized vault. It looks like a room, but it's really a vault. And when we got in there, I was like, I got an idea. This is a really, you know, foolproof room. Wouldn't it be cool if you found something secret in one of these rooms? And there's the idea. But you really have, to me, I have to kind of go see things and research them. And that's where the ideas always, you know, at least for me, that's where the ideas usually come from, is doing that research, doing that homework, seeing it for myself, and then figuring out what interests me and knowing. I have one thing that I know. I am not that special. And if I like it, I'm not that special, so hopefully other people are going to like it. So I just look around, and I always say, it's like people always say to me, what are you looking for when you research? And I always say, it's a Supreme Court definition of pornography. I know when I see it, right? You know when you see it, and that's how I always go for research.
How do you compare writing with some of the other stuff you're doing? Like, for example, I know you're the host of a couple of TV show, documentary, History Channel and stuff. I mean, how do you compare being a TV show host with writing?
You know, to me, I know it sounds almost insane to say, but they're the same. They really are. They're different mediums.
Really?
They're different mediums, but they have one thing in common, which is they tell a good story. And that's what I'm obsessed with. It's telling a good story, and sometimes it's fiction, and the palette I have to paint with is words. And sometimes it's going to be a kid's book, and then I have an artist there who's going to help me do I Am Abraham Lincoln, or I Am Amelia Earhart, and he's going to draw it, and I'm going to write it. Sometimes it's on television, and I can tell you about whether John Wilkes Booth, what happened to him after he killed Abraham Lincoln, and it's just me talking into the camera, but I'm still telling a story. And I just think different mediums require different things, but what they all require is a good story.
Tell me about your most recent book that you just came out with, I understand.
Yeah, The President's Shadow is a new one, and it opens with a very simple idea. You were talking about ideas before, and I really kind of woke up with this one. I can't even tell you where I got it from, and that is the First Lady is in the White House Rose Garden, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning. She just has a moment to herself to do some gardening, just finally a moment of normalcy, and she puts her hands into the dirt, and she smells the mulch, and out of the dirt she pulls a severed arm. And she has no idea how it got there. She doesn't know how it got past security. She certainly doesn't know that in the fist of that closed arm is going to be a puzzle that's going to have to be solved. And for me, as I said, that's fiction. That's what I make up. I go to the Secret Service, and I say to the Secret Service, listen, do me a favor and tell me what you would do if this was real, if my fictional plot was real. And the Secret Service said to me, well, the first thing I would do is I would redecorate a room at the White House. And I said, why? And they said, take some paint off one wall, take some wallpaper off another. Now I can move the First Family out of the White House across the street to Blair House. Now I can do my investigation, and nobody in the press knows what I'm up to, and no one can bother me, and no one's the wiser. And I said, that sounds like something you've done before. And they said, think of it this way. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama have all redecorated rooms at the White House. You wouldn't believe what's been done here in the name of home renovation. And I'm like, thank you for Chapter 2 and Chapter 3 and Chapter 4.
Interesting. And have any of your books been made into movies, or are you interested in having them made to movies?
Listen, I'd love them. Who wouldn't want their stuff made into a movie? That's fun, right? You get to go to the premiere and get some popcorn. But to me, that's icing on a great cake. I can't possibly ask for more. I mean, we've been very lucky. We put a TV show on the air, and then we put two that I host on the air. Like, I feel like I can't possibly say, oh, where's my movie?
Do you ever worry that you'll run out of ideas? Do you ever think, it's like the pitcher who pitches the fastball. They reach back one day and the fastball is not there. Do you ever worry about that?
Every day. Listen, everyone's career is an arc, all of us, and you'd be a fool not to be. What I do is every day I sit down to write. I flash back and think to myself of that moment when my agent was telling me that I got my 23rd and 24th rejection letter. That's my ritual every morning when I write. Every day I sit down to write, I think of that moment, and when I picked up the phone and I imagined the phone and where I was standing and the bed that was next to me with just a box spring and nothing but mattress and box spring and the window I was looking out of and a fire station across the street, and I imagined her saying to me, sorry, kiddo. And I want to imagine that moment because I want to be hungry again. I want to always remember what it was like to have nothing. Because there's no one. If you think you've got it and you think you've got it made, you're finished.
Do you miss or regret thinking that you never, practiced full time as a lawyer?
Listen, I don't know, but I feel like you meet so many people who are self-hating lawyers. I am not one of those people. I loved law school. I thought it was intellectually stimulating. I thought it was intellectually fascinating. I just think you have to follow your passion, and my passion was always writing. So, that's just always the way I follow, and that's always the way I want it to be.
Do you have your next idea for your next book yet, or you're just still just
I
kind
do.
Of...
I do. I've been working on that actually already, so once the tour is done, then I get to go back to that.
Oh, exciting. Well, Brad, it's been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're super busy. When you get to that next book, you'll have to come back and tell me about that as well.
Okay, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. This is Richard Hsu and Brad Meltzer.